हरिः ओम् सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्रीअद्वैत गदाधर शिव सरि गौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम हरे राम 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 हरे हरे.
Okay, so now we're dealing with liberation. Means that you're freed from material consciousness. Right? And that means acting according to the directions given by the Lord. Right? So if we're situated in proper consciousness, means we're following the Lord's instructions. That's the basic principle. And so then from that is then the progression of points. The jiva's consciousness under the covering of material circumstances is pervertedly reflective. That means he has a natural pure consciousness, but in the conditioned state, that becomes perverted in the reflection. The perversion is that one thinks one is that reflection. You understand? The material world, the reflection is there between the spiritual and the material world. So in that material reflection, the pure spirit soul identifies with it and thinks, I am this body, I am this mind, I am all this. That's the perversion. It doesn't mean that, but that is still looking the same as in the spiritual world. Right? You think about it. Here, people don't complain that there should be a sixth rasa, right? Or they're not complaining it's one too many. Why make life complicated? Keep it simple. You understand? Nobody's worried that trees grow out of the ground and they have leaves and roots are in the ground. They have no problem that birds fly, fish swim, right? They have no problem with that. If you think about it, no one has any problem that this place is simply exactly the reflection of the spiritual world. The same activities go on. You know, there's families, there's husbands, wives, there's children, right? There's social things, there's rites of passage, there's festivals, right? People wear clothes, you know, stuff like that. You understand? Nobody has a problem. You live in a house. You know, in the house you have a kitchen, you have a bedroom, you have all these different things. No one's complaining about this. You think about it is, we're trying to say, oh, it's so different here in the spiritual world. No, what's different about it is simply the perversion that you don't see God in it, and the soul thinks it is that. Or actually this. Okay? Does that make sense?
Pumpkins are round.
Good chance they're round, yes.
In America, they're making them square, yes?
Square pumpkins, yeah, they fit in a box better. Yeah, like that. I've also heard the square tomatoes. They're trying the square tomatoes. How do you peel a square tomato? You know, it's like that. You know, you got the edge. It's always a problem. Huh?
6 cups.
Oh, I see. Just cut it off square. Okay. That could work. That could work. Are the seeds square? You know, so. Okay, so this reflection is very important to note that everything here is like what it is there. Just the quality isn't very good because it's a reflection. Just like when you have a tree reflected in the water, the reflection in the water is exactly the same as the tree. It's just not that much detail and quality. Does that make sense? But it's the same thing. We should not think it's something different. That's very important. That's also part of the perversion. We think God's not involved in this. It's something different, something unique. Because there, why should it be different and unique? Because it's ours. Right? Because if it's not something different and unique, means it's God's, right? It's just a reflection off of the reality that's there in the spiritual world. So this is just, second grade situation. But we want to make it into first grade. And it's ours. That's what made, possession turns sand into gold, right? Like that. So then, due to this, he's entangled in the actions and reactions of his own karma, because he claims, I am the doer, I am this body, therefore he gets the reactions of karma. Right? If not, he doesn't get the reactions. Does that make sense? It doesn't make sense. It's like this. If you claim you're doing this activity, you're taking responsibility, who should get the results? Good or bad? Yeah. But if you're doing it on behalf of someone else, then who gets the results?
But simply not identifying with it, does that eliminate it?
Simply not identifying, but what do you mean by not identifying? That's the important part. How do you define not identifying with it? See, there's a feeling not identifying with it means I don't really, when you're neutral towards something?
Indifferent.
Disinterested, but indifferent. And the Western concept of indifferent is always a negative. If you're indifferent, means it's bad. Right? But what's interesting is we're using a definition that is the common definition that most people will use, but we're not actually understanding the definition. If we understood the definition, then it wouldn't be seen in a negative connotation, right? Men are indifferent means they don't deal with it at all. They're not thinking about it, they don't deal with it, nothing. Women are indifferent towards something, then they don't deal with it, but they're completely still involved. You know what I'm saying? Husband's upset them, so they're indifferent, but they're still thinking about him. You know what I'm saying? So this is the secret, is that indifference means you still work with it, but you don't have something you're trying to get from it. Does that make sense? So it actually is a positive, because you're not dealing with the mundane side of it, meaning that it's not connected to Krishna. But you're still dealing appropriately with it because it belongs to someone else. You know, so the proper example would be, let's say you have a good friend or someone is important to you and you're doing some work for them. Right? So you'll do the work very nicely, even more carefully than you would for yourself. Right? Because you're doing it for someone else. But the result's not yours, it's theirs, so you work very hard. That's the indifference we're talking about. Does that make sense? Yeah. So because they're not like that, they're entangled in it. They identify with it, so therefore the results and everything that are connected with it then are there. Okay. Then one must become free from this bodily concept of life. The living being, part and parcel of the Supreme Lord, is neither the creator nor the enjoyer, but a cooperator. Right? So the jiva, if he wants to actually become happy, has to be freed from this concept that I am the controller and enjoyer. Right? That I identify with this perverted reflection. Right? That's the whole thing. If you can do that, then you become free. Because why? We aren't a controller, we aren't the enjoyer. Our only position is that if we can cooperate. The Lord is a controller and enjoyer. So, since we are living entities, we have relationships, we have, we are active. So we can do that in relationship to the Lord, and that will work. Right? Whatever we're looking for, we'll get. Now we're under the impression, unless I try to control and enjoy it, I won't be happy. But we're not controllers and enjoyers, we're cooperators. Right? And so that's what then makes us happy. You know, just like the leaves cooperate in the system, but you can't directly deal with the leaves. You can't water the leaves and put fertilizer on the leaves. You have to water the root. Does that make sense? Like that. That is there. Then they take part in the whole system. So that's what jivas do. We can be part of the process, and in that we will be very happy. Right? We're small. How much can we control? Right? So, in other words, if you can control whatever you can control, that's as big as your experiences. Does that make sense? You know, you can get yourself a hold of a full maha plate, then that's your experience, right? If you get, you know, one, you know, little piece of sabji, one potato of a sabji, that's the more you can deal with. You understand? How much you can control is therefore how much you can experience. Does that make sense? So that's why people try to control everything, because they're trying to increase their experience. And they haven't seen that other people have controlled in a way that they enjoy. Right? Considering them. Because that means protection. You have to care about others. So someone else controls the situation, but you're protected in the process. So however big their control is how much you can enjoy. Right? Maharaj Yudhishthir controls the world. Therefore, a citizen can be peaceful and comfortable in the whole world. Right? How much they can control. Okay, they got their pitchfork, they got up their, you know, their picket fence, and so now they're protected inside their little compound. Right? And so that's as big as they can be happy, but as soon as they step out of their picket fence, then, you know, they're in anxiety. But Yudhishthira Maharaj controls the world. Right? So he's doing it to protect everyone. It's for everyone's benefit, not just him. Right? He could control the world only for himself, so wherever he goes, he's comfortable, but no one else is comfortable. But he controls the world and protects everybody else in the process. So everybody takes part in, you know, that control of the world. The benefits of controlling the world, everybody gets. Does that make sense? So that's the point, is Krishna controls everything. So if we're connected to him, that means how much he can control is how much we can share in. Right? But the difference is we don't claim it's ours. We don't say the kingdom is ours. No, it's Yudhishthira's. Does that make sense? That's the point. Think about it. 1/10,000th the tip of the hair. How much can that control? Unlimited, controlling unlimited, because the unlimited is himself. Easy. Right? We're trying to control something that's not us. That's harder, right? You know, you want to move your finger, that's easy to do. Scratch your head, you know. These kind of things you're confident you can do. But you want to have to control something beyond that, that's more difficult. So Krishna is everything, so therefore it's not like it's a separate endeavor. It's himself. So controlling anything in the cause of creation is not a problem for him. Right? So he doesn't have to establish his identity by controlling everything, because it is him. Anyway. So therefore, the element of sharing that with others, then is very natural. Right? Why would one share? And why would one not share? Right? Yeah, you have plenty to give. Or you're confident in what you have and what you'll get from it. You know, in others, I've seen, I've been in the situation and I've seen it in others, you know. It's just like, you have some other friends that are there, you go up to the, you know, front China reader, this or that, and they give you, let's say, a little piece of sandesh. And then you think about that little piece of sandesh, and you think about all your friends. And then you think, well, this isn't enough to share, you know, so then you just pop it in your mouth and figure, you know, hey, okay, what else can you do? But I've watched, you know, Indian groups come, you know, the family or extended family, and maybe 20 people there. And one guy gets a sandesh. They'll take it out and distribute it to all 20 people, and they all are very happy with what they've gotten. You know, it's Mahabhashad, they're sharing, it's a whole, you know, so it's this whole thing, all happening over one piece of sandesh. You know, the Western mind is, well, what are you going to do with one piece of sandesh? Because they're looking at the senses and the sense objects, that's the actual, you know, control and enjoy. But they're thinking of it as relationship, the sharing. So they actually get more out of it than the other. Because, you know, the Western has eaten it simply to be practical. You know, how much do you get, how much taste do you get out of just being practical? Right? Not that much, you know, like that. But here it's something sharing, family, Mahaprasad, you know, doing something together, even though it's seemingly so insignificant, right? So that's the thing. For Krishna, then, he has no anxieties that he's not going to enjoy. He already is the enjoyer. He already is Atmarama and happy. So now it's a matter of sharing with the living entities. Does that make sense? That's what then makes him more happy. And then you can imagine, God is Atmarama. That means the whole cosmic creation, what it is, just being situated in that, then it must be great happiness, right? The jiva is, a small jiva is situated on the Brahman platform, right? And that happiness is like an ocean compared to a drop of of happiness that is this material pleasure of this world. And we're talking Lord Brahma. You know, we're not talking around here happiness. Right? So then that position is just the Atmarama situation of the jiva. Right? That's one jiva. Krishna includes all jivas, unlimited jivas, and the whole internal potency. And then there's himself. So his state of Atmarama is so much greater. Right? That makes sense. Then he adds on to that, to increase that, the happiness of rasa of interacting with the individual living entities. Right? So if you're cooperating, then you're sharing in his happiness plus the happiness on top of that of the rasa. Now that's a lot greater than you could get as Atmarama yourself. Right? That's why it's always pointed out. How much you'll get out of just, you know, being liberated isn't even worth it compared to the devotional. And compared to that, the material isn't even worth that. You know? Because when we're talking here, we're not just saying it's a little more. It's a lot more. Right. The Anandavali and the Taittiriya Upanishad. But it establishes that happiness, if we want to judge happiness, just to get the proper, you know, relationship, then they take one unit of human happiness would be equivalent to a king who is the emperor of the world in an unrivaled kingdom. You know, in other words, the position that Yudhishthira Maharaj was in. Right, because you rarely ever hear of unrivaled emperorship. A few people had it. That's considered one unit of human happiness to be able to use it in this formula. Right? And so then we could probably from there go back a little bit and figure out where we fit into that. Right? You know, so that would be, you know, very small. But whatever. Like that. We don't want to make anyone feel bad, you know, about what they have controlled and are enjoying at this present, right? You know, so like that. So that's considered one unit of happiness. Now when you go up to the antariksha, right, the space in between the heavenly planets and the earthly planets, the rakshasas, yakshas, gandharvas, kinaras, kimpurushas, all that, their happiness is 100 times that. Right? And this is just, you know, some paisach or something like that, you know. Then you get to actually the residence of the heavenly planets. I mean, it's just your common citizen, you know, pious citizen who is there to enjoy himself. It's 100 times that. Right? Then you have the demigods who are actually in charge of things in the universe, right? How that actually run things like that. They're 100 times that. Right? Then 100 times that will be the demigods that are actually in charge of the main positions in the universe. You know, Agni, Varuna, Vayu, all them. Right? The Dikpals. Then 100 times that is Indra. Right? That's why he gets so bent out of shape, right? Because he's already, we've got 100 for the antariksha, 100 for the lower, 100 for the managing, 100 for the higher, and then 100 times him. So, 5, you know, 100 to the 5th. Is it? Yeah, it's 100 times each time. So 100 to the fifth is his happiness. You know, so you can see why he gets a little bent out of shape when there's some sadhu doing some austerities and all that, you know, like that. Then 100 times that will be that of Brihaspati. Right? Then 100 times that are the Prajapatis. Right? And 100 times that is Brahma. Right? Now that is all taken and then condensed down to that, then is taken now, is understood as one drop compared to the ocean of happiness of Brahmananda, right? Which is just the state of the living entity, you know, not being in the material world, but not being in the spiritual world, right? That is, and this is a drop compared to an ocean. Right? So a drop's full size and an ocean is, you know, like we know, a big, it's very big. But, you know, it's still got shore, it still has a bank, this bank, that bank, you know, it still has a size. Then that ocean is taken as a fraction of a portion of a drop. Right? A drop's already small. So you're taking a portion of a drop and then taking a fraction of that. So this ocean is a fraction, a portion of a drop compared to the shoreless, unlimited ocean of the happiness of devotional service. Right? And going just back so that we know why we say it, you know, in many temples every day on one of the offenses of the holy name, to think that, you know, what's being described in the Shastras is exaggeration. This is not exaggeration. This is just giving you an idea. Right? This is real. When Rupa Goswami says, when I hear, you know, when I chant the holy name, I wish I had millions of tongues. When it enters my ear, I wish I had millions of ears. Right? This is real. This is an exaggeration. You know? Because why is that being given? Because when you talk about the heavenly planets in the Shastra, then it's simply pointing out the nice parts, right? You go there, you live for, you know, let's say it's the moon planet, 10,000 years, you'll be there, you know, enjoying in so many ways. And, this, you know, they're telling you what facilities there and everything and how long you live, right? You're deathless, Amara, they did notice they said 10,000 years, so... Somehow or another, people don't put two and two together. So that's the point, is they just give the nice stuff, and people don't put two and two together. Now, what happens after 10,000 years? You have to die. Since you can't die in the heavenly planets, you have to be kicked out of the heavenly planets to die. Right? You know, it's just like saying, nobody dies in this house, and then when somebody starts to wheeze, we drag him out into the street and let him die out in the gutter, right? So that's the heavenly planets. Right? Nobody dies in heaven. Why? Because as soon as they're going to die, they kick him out. So they die in the space in between. While they're falling from the heavenly planets to the earth, then at that time, that's where they die, right? You know, and since you're 16, you know, you always look 16 years old and this and that. So generally, it's not a heart attack or anything. You know, it's like you're too youthful. So what happens is those demigods that are, their time is up in the heavenly planets, where they fall from the heavenly planets to the earthly planets, then they become food for the Rakshasas. You understand? So the Rakshasas are very, very enthusiastic. Right? And so they come, and while they're falling through there, they eat them. They don't bother with that, you know, so they're still alive. So that's not what you call a very pleasant situation. So because of that, then the demigod starts to cry, right, from the pain. And in that tear, the soul comes out and falls as rain. And then as rain, then they come and, you know, land here on the earth. And then after that, they grow as a blade of grass. That's the process. Then the grass, you know how you say it, means that grass or that thing like that is grown, that becomes grain. The grain is eaten by the human, then that jiva is put into the semen, that's injected into the womb. Then you have another child, they grow up, they perform yajna, then they get the piety, they go to the heavenly planets. That's the cycle. Right? It's explained in Gita. It gives the cycle. There's five things of consideration. So that's the cycle, the karmic cycle. So that Gita will explain, Upanishad will explain, but the Karmakanda sections don't explain. They only tell you half of it, right? Because no one wants to know the other half, you know? No one asks. So that's the point. It's like, you know what you don't know won't hurt you. Or you ask no questions, hear no lies, right? So in this case is that it's truth, but from this, it becomes actually an over-exaggeration because it's not actually explaining things as it fully is. Not that you don't live for 10,000 years, not that it's not going to be nice. You know, it's like, okay, we live here, you know, it's not so good. You know, you go to a nicer part of town, it's a little bit better. So, yes, it will be a nicer part, you know, of the universe. You know, it's a higher grade suburbs, right? You know, like that. So that's nice, like that. But there's more to it. The point is that still that, like, here we're disturbed that we have so much, someone else has more. But it's going to be the same thing there. You've worked, you've gotten the results of your activity. They've worked, they've got the results of theirs. So just like someone works more here, gets more here, same thing there. Someone's more pious, they have more facilities. Yes.
Imagine that example you have in one section of Bhagavad Gita specifically mentions the moon.
The moon.
Is there any difference to the cycle?
You would have to go do more. It's the same. No, it's the same cycle. The heavenly planets are the heavenly planets. The moon is connected with Pitri Loka. So those who are pious and nice but haven't necessarily done any significant sacrifice. In other words, they lived a pious life. So then they'll generally go to Pitri Loka. And Pitri Loka is connected with the moon somehow. So I'm not exactly sure what's the connection, but it's the same position. So, but then to go to the other planets, that's much, then you have to do big, big, you know, yajnas and this and that. That's why Pandu was asking through Narad Muni that Yudhishthira Maharaj do the Rajasuya, because that will then elevate him to the heavenly planets, you know, beyond the moon. You know, that's longer term, and it will also send the father. Like that. Is that okay? Yes.
So everybody is an ancestor.
Everybody is or has?
Has been an ancestor.
So has been an ancestor.
Who gets to go to the Pitri Loka?
The ancestors. So when you are an ancestor, you get to go there. When you're not an ancestor, you don't get to go there. Pious people. Those who follow the Vedic culture and are pious, they go there. People who aren't pious and that, they go to hell. So that's why hell is known as Put. So that's why then the son does the Shraddha rite to free Tra, the father, from Putra. That's the meaning. Son means one who frees his father from hell. Like, then they go to Pitri Loka. So it's a whole, the mechanics of the universe, it means the obligations are there. You believe in them or not, it doesn't work like that. It's not that, you know, you believe in the God of Abraham and Isaac and Moses and then things work that way. And if you don't, it doesn't. No, God is God. His universe works the way it works. You believe it or not, doesn't matter. You know, what is it? You can't, I can't remember what the term is. It basically means you can't go against City Hall. You know, it's just can't fight City Hall. That's just the way it is. But it's a matter of what religion you are in that. Then when it mentions that, you know, the next verse, you know, today's verse in the Bhagavatam, then it's about, now they've talked about him dying and feeling bad about everybody here that's there and crying and all that. But the next verse is that now he sees the Yamadutas. just starting to get good, right? You know, he thought it was bad. Not, you know, no, that was the good part, you know, the crying relatives and all that. Now you come to Yamadutas. Now those guys are not looking so good. Since we're on all these side little things that have nothing to do with anything and no one ever hears about them, you want to know how someone becomes a Yamaduta and why Yamadutas look the way they look. Okay. So you have people on Pitri Loka. So they were pious themselves. They go there. Now what's required is that three generations, they have to offer the pinda. So it means the person has gone to Pitri Loka, then his son must offer pinda. then his grandson must offer, and his great-grandson must offer. That will keep them there, because the pinda, every once a year when they offer the rice balls and whatever it is, that's 1 year's food supply. So there's one rice ball here, but the conversion rate is very good. You know, even better than the, what is it, the dinar? I think that's the most powerful currency. It's better than that. So one ball of rice, or I think it's two balls like that, that's a year's supply of food. And then the other things that you offer, then that's a year's supply. That's why once a year it's offered. So now, for those that their descendants are offering, then they have all facility and they're quite happy and comfortable. For those that don't, then you start to get pretty hungry and pretty annoyed, because you're a pious person. That's why you're there. And people not offering the shraddha, right, the pinda, that means because they're not pious. So naturally, a pious person never has very good things to think about or say about impious persons. So now you can imagine that you're in the Pitri Loka, you have no food, no nothing, but somehow or another, because you're destined to be there for X amount of time, you don't die. Right? So, you know, you know what you look like when you're really annoyed about something. You don't necessarily look so good. So you can imagine, you know, just years and years and years of that, you start to look a little strange. So once you become strange enough and it's obvious no one's going to take care of you, then Yamaraj is very kind to them. Is that then he makes them officers in his you know, machinery of bringing you know, people that are to come to his court. So then they become officially Yamadutas. And being a Yamaduta, they get a cut of everybody else's, you know, pinda, like that. So therefore they get maintained in that. But it doesn't seem to do much for them looks. It's already seems to have been like that. So then they, so that's why they're so enthusiastic about catching people who are impious, right? So they really put on a good show when they come with that. You know, they got their, you know, their hair and their chains and their dogs. You could probably make a, you know, a heavy metals band dressed like that. It would be very popular. Yeah, you know, like that. So they come and then, so they're very enthusiastic in that way. But if someone's pious, then they put on their best, you know, appearance. They're very nice. They take care very nicely. They take you there. So there's not a problem like that. So it's not that they have attitude just in general. It's only towards those who are impious. So the pious, they will treat very nicely like that. But the impious, then they have no qualms about, you know, ripping them out of their body and, you know, the barking, snapping dogs and, you know, dragging them along the road. They have no problem at all. Yes? Pious and impious, everyone sees Yamaraj. But if you're pious, going there is nice. You're escorted by the Yamadutas nice, so you might even get a chariot, something to go in. You don't have to walk. It goes very quickly. The dogs are there to protect you rather than to, you know, bite you. You know, stuff like that. Because these dogs, I think they have three heads like that. You know, so it's, you know, whatever it is, you know, Harry Potter was not something new. That's the dog's there. But they can see, you know, everything. You know, past, present, future, every direction. There's no way to get away from these dogs. So the Yamadutas bring these dogs to make sure you get to his place. When you get down to the place, then there's his place where he works, and then there's the river, the Vaitarani River. This river then, depending upon your piety, takes different forms. So if you're very pious, you've performed all the different, you know, activities you should, then the river's very nice, calm, peaceful river with nice fish and lotuses and that. There's a boatman there. You get in the boat. You're taken across. You go into Yamaraj's court. You're received nicely. And, you know, your pious credits are given and stuff like that. Maybe if you're pious but you haven't done all the different rituals of the Karmakanda, then when you get there's no boat. But at least it's a nice river to swim across. You know, but if you're impious, then definitely there's no boat. But then the river takes on a worse form until it gets down to the point where it's just full of all these, you know, nasty place full of these fish that have all these razor sharp fins. And you know how fish, when you go in the water, they love to swim next to you? So razor sharp fins, big fish, not so good. And if someone's really sinful, the present Yamaraj won't even deal with you. So then these fish, you know, harass you so much, you just sink down to the bottom and you wait there until the next Yamaraj. He'll deal with you. Because, right? then you can be first case because he's, you know, it's fresh. He doesn't mind dealing with you like that. But this Yamaraj has done enough with a bunch of sinful. So you just wait there until the next one. You know, and I'm sure these fish are quite friendly. You know, some of them keep coming by, like that. So like that. Then you get there, and then, so if you're pious, then he has the form of, you know, as regular form of the demigod. You know, it's his court. Everybody's there. All the forefathers are there. So it's quite a nice, you know, pompous arrangement. If it's not, then he's this very dark and, you know, red-eyed, very how you say it? Not overly, uninviting, yes, uninviting form. So he has different forms. Like that, yes. Well, those who meditate on Paramatma. Depends what you mean by meditate on Paramatma. Meditate on Paramatma. It depends on how they define Paramatma.
So what are
the options? One is Paramatma is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, so that when you actually have darshan of the Lord, you surrender and take up devotional service. The other is that you think you are Paramatma when you see him. And so you merge into Paramatma. So it's the same as the impersonalist.
Prabhupada said that all my disciples will go to heavenly planets. So what will happen to them?
Want to go to the heavenly planets.
No, he said all my disciples
will
go
to the heavenly planets. Will go. I think so. In the Gita, then, it describes that someone who's taken up devotional service, taken up devotional service, but hasn't taken it so seriously, so hasn't become fixed very strongly in devotional service. In other words, someone who doesn't reach nishta, then whatever is the distraction in their life, you know, whatever it may be, prestige or money or, you know, sense gratification, whatever it is that, then they'll go to the heavenly planets and whatever that is, they'll get plenty of that. You know? Then having, you know, run the course of that, then they'll come back and take birth in the family of, you know, religious aristocracy, nobility, you know, some higher echelon of society that there's more of a tendency to be involved in, you know, intellectual activity. They have the time for it. They're more inclined towards refinement, like that. Does that make sense? No, they're devotees. This is another part. You don't have to worry about the rakshasas because they're right. Like that. You understand that? What I described is a cycle for karmakandis. Devotees don't see Yamaraj. It's just arranged, you know, the material energy just arranges them, their next birth. So they're just put into that womb and stuff like that. You don't have to go through the mechanics because you don't identify with the world. Well, the karmis do. So therefore they go through the mechanics of the material world. Right? So from that implication is that means people who are from these nice, good families and all that on the world, they're there because they've done devotional service. You understand? All those rich, wealthy, powerful people in the world, they're in those positions because they've done devotional service. This is sixth canto of Bhagavatam. I've only seen it in one place, but it's mentioned. Right? So we think, or just, you know, a ragtag bunch of devotees, but we don't understand how much influence devotional service has on the universe. Seeing that it's run by God, And God's interested in devotees. So that means anyone born in other than normal circumstances is because they've done devotional service. But they weren't that serious.
But from heavenly plan, they cannot go directly. We cannot go. We have to come back to earth.
Unfortunately, yes. It's just like this. Let us say the day is not going so good. Right? Tendency is to think of Krishna. Let us say the day is going really good. You know, people are coming up to you and great and haven't seen you and giving you things and making you feel very special. Are you thinking about Krishna? No. So that's why in the heavenly planets no one goes back to Godhead. Does that make sense? Like that, yes. Somebody, yes. That's the normal thing anyway. It's not a, it means our shraddhas is just something we do once. You know, it's like that. Goswami mentions that the 11th day after they die, then you have a gathering of, you know, what you consider sincere devotees, discuss philosophy concerning, you know, the appropriate topics, prasad, kirtan, distribute prasad to the devotees. After everybody's been fed, then you make a plate for that devotee, like that, and then, you know, like that. Then they get the benefit.
So prasadam distribution is recommended in the name of that.
Sorry?
So prasadam distribution in the...
It's not recommended, it's one of the main elements. I mean, what I've described, that is... One should not think that's complicated. Complicated is... a full chapter in Manu. You're talking about 50, 60 pages. When you're serving the prasad, if you don't pick up the pot with two hands, the forefathers won't accept it. If you shake the pot, you know, you take it up, shake it to see what it is, they won't accept that offering. If the place where you serve is not squeaky clean, beautiful, nice, aesthetic, doesn't mean you're just kind of in the back, you know, so like, wonderful place, they won't accept it. If the people who are eating are not top-class, high-grade Brahmins, they won't accept it. If after the meal one of those Brahmins goes home and, you know, is intimate with his wife, they won't accept it. Right? Like this. If you don't take care of each guest that you're taking care of for the Shraddha rite perfectly, with no mistake, they won't accept it. Therefore, this thing, my father died, feed 5,000 devotees in Mayapur, that's not a Shraddha rite. It recommends three people. And if you can't find three, then one will do. Right? And then what you're serving, how it's served. Nobody can talk about it and say, this is nice prasad. Everyone just said, because you're eating on behalf of someone else. So, I'm just starting on the rules if you want to do karma kanda shraddha rites. So when Prabhupada says, we don't care for the rules, means we don't do all that. We have a kirtan, make nice prasad, feed some devotees, make a plate. That's not rules. You understand? That is not rules. That is above the... You're just getting the essence. But devotees are so uninformed that the few little directions that Prabhupada gives to give a form to the culture... They're the essential points of the rituals themselves. Then the devotees, then they're now the big, you know, paramahamsas, and what Prabhupada's given is the ritualistic karma kanda. It's like they have no idea what they're talking about. I'm not joking. When I say pages, pages doesn't mean two or three. I mean like maybe 20, 30. That's the shraddha, right? Who you can invite. You know, if a Brahmin, his occupation is not studying the Shastra and teaching the Shastra, then he can't be invited. You can't invite a Brahmin who's an Ayurvedic doctor. You know, you can't invite this one or that one. You can't invite just, you know, loose lady. You can't invite anybody, practically. For demigod worship, much simpler. Just a good Brahmin, that's nice enough. But for the Shraddha rite, it's so detailed. There's three pages of kinds of Brahmins you cannot invite to the Shraddha. You're like a Brahmin who's doing business or carpentry or this or that. In other words, if he is does yajnas, does puja, does teaching, studies shastra, and that's it, that's the Brahmin you can invite. You know what I'm saying? And then, what you have to wear, what they have to wear, everything. It's like so detailed. And you get anything wrong and it doesn't work. You know, say, that's karmakanda. I already said. Yeah. But in a controlled environment. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? You invite some devotees. You have, some kirtan, some discussions on philosophy. Distribute prasad to them very nicely. And then after that's finished, then you make a plate for whoever it is that you're doing the shraddha rite for. Right? And that plate nobody eats. It's put outside somewhere. That's what you do. But you only have to do it once. Right? Because it's prasad and not that. Others they have to do regularly because it's a whole different system. Karmakanda, they have to do it every month for the first year, and after that every year, on that date for the rest of their life. Right? So we're saved from all that. So that's the unfortunate is that what little rules we have, like Akadasi, the amount of rules that are there if you want to get into detail or Chaturma, all it is no grains and beans. That's it. That's all. It doesn't say you can eat 20 times a day or do this or that. Just don't eat grains and beans. That's all. Right? Chaturmasa, there's like 44 rules to be followed. But all it is don't eat spinach, don't eat milk, yogurt, and Erdal. And even that, fanatic. It's like you're dealing with the lowest grade of culture here, of restriction, nothing. It's kind of like, you'd have to button your shirt, when you go to the opera. Oh, so fanatic. Disgusting. You know what I'm saying? Simple. Lord Chaitanya made it. Right? His mother just has to follow a codicil. No grains and beans. That's all. And Chaturmasa just has to do those four. That's it. That's all Lord Chaitanya gave. He requested his mother do that. Then we'll say it's fanatic. So then we're saying Lord Chaitanya's fanatic. We're saying Srila Prabhupada's fanatic. And somehow or another, the Westerner who has no culture himself and no self-control or restriction, he's the authority on what is, proper, non-fanatic, devotional activities. Does this make sense? So that's all it is. It's very simple. It's not different from any other programs we have. Is that okay? Yes. Yes. What about the jivas that come from the lower planets? No, it hasn't. I haven't heard that that's how it works, but maybe. I'm not sure. It hasn't. I haven't seen a description of that. But in any case, see, these things don't matter. It's arranged anyway, so it's out of our hands. We just know that there's a mechanics how it works in the universe. Okay. Yes?
About the power of chanting the holy name, but what is happening with the relatives of the devotees? Because devotees, they are not performing in the rituals of offering.
Because you're chanting, then they'll get benefit. Means those that you know get benefit. You know what I'm saying? The point is you know your father, grandfather, like that, they get the benefit. It doesn't keep going or out. It's ones that you are there. So it means in this lifetime, then, there's three generations. Previous lifetime, then there's three generations. Lifetime before that, there's three generations. So when it says 21 generations, it means like that. Said 21 generations. That's a lot. 21 generations is a lot. No, it's 21 generations. So however many lifetimes back or forward that it goes. The 21, that's the maximum that one benefits. I mean, that's 10 before, 10 after, and the 21st is yourself. So you've saved yourself, and so therefore you saved 10 generations back and 10 generations ahead. Like that. That's the biggest you can get. Yes.
I had my experience when my father died. I asked Krishna what he was atheist completely. I asked Krishna what benefit he has now that I'm demonstrating. And my father came in a dream and thought, I will be no more so stupid, work whole life for the family. And what you will do, Daddy? Now I will build a temple in Nilachala.
Ah, okay, nice. Okay. My dad didn't say that. That's good. That's good. Yeah.
What's happening to the people who are mainly in Rajas?
Mainly in Rajas?
He said they are coming back to the earthly planet.
No, everybody comes to the earth planet. You go up, you come back to here. You go down, you come back to here. You know what I'm saying? This is the central station. Everything goes out of here and comes back to here.
One is mainly...
But it's terminal, right? Central terminal, not station.
If one is mainly influenced by Rajas, he's going...
It doesn't matter what mode you're going to come back here. You know what I'm saying? You'll be born here again. After whatever. You've done something and then you go to the heavenly planets and that runs out, you come here. You've done sinful activities, you go to the lower planets, you come back here. You've done more sinful activity, you go to hell, take animal birth, this and that, then you'll come back here. As Prabhupada mentions is that it's like whatever birth you are here, then you go to hell, go through the animal species, when that's over you come back and be put in the exact same situation you were in from when you went to hell. Right? So now what does that mean if we look at that? Exact same situation. That means, you know, you have whatever car, clothes you have, your apartment, your iPod, whatever it is, that from there you went to hell. When you come back, it will be there again. That means every Kali Yuga at some point, exactly what facilities are there now, are there. Every Kali Yuga. 1,000 times in a day of Brahma. And modern man wants to claim we're unique and different and special and have nothing to do with Vedic culture. Like that. It's there the same because last lifetime they did it. You know, maybe it was an e-pod last time or something. You know, or something else, you know. You know what I'm saying? So that's the whole thing is it's the same thing. Chewing the chewed means chewing the chewed. But we think, oh, it's new and unique because we dream. How did we dream it up? Right? Krishna's in the heart. He gives the intelligence. So people want to enjoy in a certain way. Therefore, the fashions come out, this and that. You know what I'm saying? It's like previously, you know, what's fashion now, people before wouldn't call fashion. You know, what people, it means when your clothes look like what they do now in fashion, previously they would have thrown them out, given them to beggars. You know what I'm saying? So now fashion means wearing worn-out clothes or wearing underwear. You know what I'm saying? That's fashion. You know what I'm saying? Just change the cloth, change the color, change the texture. And now it's not underwear anymore. You know what I'm saying? You wear your underwear. You know, it's like I've only seen it in Poland. There they do it. They go on, take off their clothes, just wear their underwear at the beach. Nobody cares. It's perfectly fine. Anywhere else in the world, they'd freak out, right? Indecent exposure, this, that. You take the same underwear, right, make them into some kind of waterproof cloth and put some different colors on it. It's called a bikini, right? Or it's called, what do they call them now? Speedos. Yeah, Speedos, right? Speedos are really... skimpy male underwear, right, like that. So if a guy took, you know, had that kind of in regular, you know, like Fruit of the Loom or something like that underwear, took off his pants, was walking on the beach, people would probably call the police. But if it's a Speedo, which is exactly the same thing, then somehow or another he's well dressed. You understand? That's such a, where does that kind of brain come from? You know what I'm saying? So therefore, the modes of nature just arrange that people think like this. That's all. So every as Kali Yuga progresses, all these different tastes that Kali Yuga people taste come up at one point. And depending upon where your karma is, that's where you come back to. So every taste is there. Every Dwapara Yuga goes through a certain process. Every Treta, every Satya. So all the experiences that a human being could get are therefore spread out over the four Yugas. And every four Yugas, it's exactly the same. Right? Narad Muni is explaining to Vyasadeva that he was in the previous universe, and it looked the same as this one. So when it's recreated the same. Slight different flavor. So therefore, for a thousand yugas, there's a slight different flavor. But that even that goes through cycles. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? So there's a little variety in that, but then all of them are that same kind of flavor. Then the next day of Brahma, slightly different flavor, all the same. So this idea that it's something new and unique and special doesn't exist. Spiritual world it is, because it's eternal. But here everything's temporary. Does that make sense? Okay. Yes.
I heard it said that even though they may live 10,000 years on the moon or on the planet, that to them it doesn't seem any longer than it is for us to live 100
years.
Yes.
No, the experience is 100 years. Whatever Brahma, it's 100 years.
So this Kamakanda glamorous, rosy picture is actually a deceit.
It's not a deceit. It's just you're telling them, you're telling only the facts they want to hear. And then they will interpret it in their own ways. We mentioned yesterday the verbal cognition. By verbal cognition, they'll say, oh, this will be great, this will be wonderful, it'll be like that. But the facts don't actually collaborate that.
Like a holiday agency or advertising.
Yeah. They just say it's so wonderful, it's so great and all that, and you got a great view and so like that, and so all these things. But when it's always back from the room, so you can see part of the room and you can see the view. But if you go out on the veranda, you can always see, the lady next door hanging out her laundry and, the kids down the street yelling and screaming. You know, that they don't show in the picture. That's all. Standard. That's how you say travel agents all over the universe use the same, come to the heavenly planets. It's like that. So it's okay. So end here.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Jai Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivedanta ki, Janyata Gaura Premanandi.